For many years, the country of Chile produced wines that were labeled Merlot, but in fact were made from a grape called Carmenere. This situation was corrected about 30 years ago, and today Carmenere has become one of the most loved Chilean fine wines. In this episode, you will hear from a winemaker who makes perhaps the very best Carmenere in the world, and you'll find out why you should give Carmenere a try if you haven't already. This is the Inside Wine Podcast. I'm Joe Janisch, a certified specialist of wine and wine industry professional since 1996, giving you insider tips to make the right wine decisions. Today, our special guest is Aurelio Montes Jr., who is a former boxer, an off-road motorcyclist, a passionate skydiver, and when he's not relaxing with those pursuits, he spends his time performing dangerous, death-defying feats in the wine cellar as the chief winemaker of Montes Winery in Chile. Thank you so much for joining me today, Aurelio.
Hello, Joe. It's a pleasure. Yeah, very happy to be able to talk with you.
And I am thrilled and honored to be able to talk to you, Aurelio. So I have many questions about Carmenere, which is one of my favorite grapes and is a specialty of yours. But first, because our listener may not be familiar with the Montes Winery, nor with fine wine from Chile, could you please give us a quick history of how Montes came about and why it's been such a pioneering winery in South America?
Yeah, every time I have to talk about Montes, I feel so proud because if you go back to the 30 years ago, to the middle of the 80s, and you look down to the situation of the wine industry at that time, was a completely different situation from today. Montes started in the middle of a big crisis, wine crisis in the 80s. There was a big campaign in the world against alcohol and tobacco and blah, blah, blah. So people, they stopped drinking more wine. And here we start suffering. And my father realized that for many years in Chile, we were so focused in the entry-level wines and in the simple wines. But there were so many places in Chile where we could get some amazing quality. So I will say my father was one of the first ones to start talking about terroir. In the past in Chile, terroir was a unknown word. And so my father was so convinced that the only way to survive in the wine industry was to prove to the world that Chile was more than a everyday and simple wine, was a kind of amazing country. So that's why he decided to start with Montes with three other partners. And the amazing story about Montes is that they started without any money. There were three crazy partners, all of them very passionate about wine in different areas. But the big thing in common was they didn't have money. So why? Because they didn't want to invite anyone that obliged them to do something that they didn't want to do. So they say, let's keep our philosophy. Let's keep what we believe. So let's be an extra small boutique winery. We don't want to be a medium or big winery. So they started like that. And they were so convinced in the quality that they start producing the first premium wines from Chile. And to be honest with you, people in the world, they were so excited about this new Chile that they start asking for more and more wine. So Montes start growing. And in between that, they decided, and I say they, the four partners, they decided to grow slowly. First, because they didn't have the money to grow. And second, they wanted to be very responsible in terms of producing high quality since the beginning to the very end. And of course, in all that process, Montes went through different situations, good ones, bad ones. But the most beautiful thing is that today we're still the leader and the pioneers in terms of quality, in terms of being premium. So I feel very proud of being the second generation in charge of the winemaking and being part of the family that owns Montes. So that's a little bit, a very short story of how we started.
Yeah, and I remember when I first came into the wine industry, it was 1996. And it was a very similar to what you described. I remember actually working on a Chilean brand that I will not mention right now, and it was cheap wine. And I remember that was, yeah, and that was the perspective of Chilean wine in the United States, was that, oh, it's that wine you get at the supermarket for $5 and it's just to drink. It's nothing special. And I do remember having a Montes wine, and all of a sudden my mind just opened up, and I said, oh my goodness, there's wonderful, delicious, beautiful wines from Chile. What a wonderful thing to discover. And while I was talking to a winemaker from Chile at that time, and they were talking about Carmenere. And I was like, what is Carmenere? And apparently it used to be, the people down there thought that it was Merlot. Do you know this story? Can you tell the story of how this wine that they thought it was Merlot for so many years, and all of a sudden they said, oh no, it's something else. How did this happen?
Yeah, everything started in the 1800 when a few wealthy families from Chile decided to go to France, and they decided to bring some vines from Bordeaux. So they brought some vines here and they start planting. And I say, okay, we brought Cabernet Sauvignon, we brought Merlot, we brought Chardonnay, Chardonnay is not from Bordeaux, but they brought also Chardonnay, some Cabernet Franc, and other grapes. So for many years, we produced our own Chilean Merlot. But the funny story is that for many, many years, when normally journalists give some points or judges, you know, evaluate the wine, they say, wow, this is a very different Merlot. So everyone started calling the Chilean Merlot, not because it was from Chile, because it was so different from the rest. And in 1994, a French expert, ampelographer, is the guy that can recognize the grape through the leaf. He said, come on here, you have a blend in inside of the Merlot plantations. There's some vines of Carmenere and some vines of Merlot. And at that time, we say, what is Carmenere? We didn't know anything about that grape. Where it come from, what type of grape do you get, what type of flavor do you get. But the funny story that we had been producing this Carmenere for more than 100 years, and we didn't know that. So since 1994, we decided to separate it, to clean the blocks, the plantations of Merlot. And now we can say that we have pure Merlot in our vines and pure Carmenere in the other blocks. So since that, we have been learning about Carmenere. And I have to tell you something. Carmenere, it is by far one of the most difficult grapes to grow. And that's one of the biggest reasons why there's only Carmenere in Chile. There's a few very tiny, small plantations in other places in the world, including France, including Bordeaux. But you need a so specific type of climate and soil, so terroir, that it's hard to get it in other places. So what I have found in my life is that the best place to grow Carmenere by far in the world is Chile. And that's why today we call the Chilean grape. Even if it, of course, is not a native grape, but came from Bordeaux.
Yeah, so in Bordeaux, I guess it was more of a blending grape, whereas in Chile, you make single varietal wines from it, and you also make blends as well.
Yeah.
Now, is the Chilean terroir similar to Bordeaux, or is it completely different?
No, completely, completely different. First of all, you have to think that we have a very spread wine area. In between the northern plantation and the southern plantation, we have more than 1,000 miles of difference. So in between, we have so many different type of climate and soil. But most of the plantation, especially when we talk about Carmenere, 99% of the plantation are located in the central area of Chile. And if you make me compare with some other places of the world in terms of climate, I would say California by far. I have been working in California. We're still producing wines from California. And I have been almost in every wine region in the world. And if you compare Chile with Bordeaux, it's completely different. And that's why the reason they use as a blender and we use as a single variety. The main reason is because if you want to get a nice, ripe, beautiful Carménère, you need a very long and dry autumn, and a little warm autumn. So if you start getting some rain, you have to wait so long for the harvest. Normally you harvest 1 month later than the latest grape that you harvest. So in Chile, the latest grape you harvest is normally, depend on the place, but it's Cabernet Sauvignon, and it's middle end of April. And Carménère, normally we harvest middle end of May. So remember that we are in the opposite, you know, hemisphere of the United States. So our seasons are opposite than you. So that's why May for us is almost the beginning of winter. So that's why we are able to produce Carménère. So our weather here, it's I'm a little bit fanatic about Chile because I'm Chilean, but it's one of the most wonderful weather you're going to find in the world, because you have a cold winter where in the mountain you can get some snow, but where I live, it's very weird, very strange if you get if snow. So it's a cold winter, but nice, and not too cold, and of course not warm. And during summer, exactly opposite. It's warm, but not too warm. And during the nights are very cold for summer. They are cold, so nice to sleep without any air condition in your bed with a blanket. So it's a nice weather, very mild, and for the grapes are beautiful because you never get too much warm during the day or you never get hot days during summer. So the grapes ripe slowly, like cooking in the oven for many hours. At the end of the season, at the end of the ripening season, you get a very equilibrated grapes, very ripe, with a beautiful acidity. You don't get any burn problem in the grapes. So Chile has a quite easy weather to play with vines.
Sounds ideal. It sounds perfect for almost any grape in addition to Carménère.
Yeah.
You mentioned Cabernet Sauvignon, and when people ask me about Carménère, if they've never had it before and they're not sure if they'll like it, I always try to say it's kind of in between Cabernet and Merlot. Is that a good way to describe it for someone who wants to try it and has never had it before?
Definitely yes. You have you have the structure of the Cabernet Sauvignon in terms of volume. You put the wine in your mouth and it's so tasty, feel your mouth very easily, but at the same time, instead of having the more rustic or aggressive tannin from Cabernet Sauvignon, you get all the silky tannins coming from Merlot. So at the end, you have the power, but at the same time, very easy and soft mouth that make the wine very easy to drink. So we call it the spicy friend because it's not even in between Merlot and Cabernet. It's unique. So you have the structure of the wine in between Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon. But when you talk about aromas, it's one of the most spiciest grapes you're going to find in the world. Very spicy, nice. But believe me, it's not green. It's spicy because some people confuse green flavor with spiciness. Here you get a lot of pepper, you know, lime, rosemary, blueberries. So it's a very nice equilibrated wine, but more spicy than Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon.
And maybe the best Carménère made in the world is made by Montes. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's hard to say which one is the best, but I can tell you that we put a lot of effort here. We have been researching about this grape since the beginning. And we have been planting, taking the risk in many, many places. We have planted Carménère in very extreme steep slopes and also in a very flat, rich soil. So we have been planting everywhere in the north, in the south of Chile. So trying to learn about Carmenere. And after many years studying and researching about Carmenere, we found a few spots that blow our mind, that make us crazy about Carmenere. And as I told you at the beginning, when you put Carmenere in an incorrect place, it can be quite unpleasant wine, green, with aggressive tannins, distillated acidity. So, but in the opposite, when you find the correct spot, it's so magical. It's unique. And that's what I love Carmenere. Some people ask me, Aurelio, but it's better than... No, it's not that it's better than other grape. It's different and has a huge space when you talk about premium or icon wines. And we have been producing for now almost 20 years our most known and famous wine, the Purple Angel, that is made 92% for Carmenere. And believe me, it has been by far our biggest rock star of Montes, because I feel that people really appreciate the equilibrium in between spiciness, softness, sweetness. Not sweetness in terms of sugar, sweetness in terms of how sweet are the tannins. So very silky, with a very nice and nice finish in the back palate of the mouth. So it's a wine that every time that you open a bottle of wine, people get so impressed and happy with the wine. So that's why we feel so confident. But it's not free. We have been working very tough with Carmenere.
Purple Angel was the wine that blew my mind away about Chilean wine. I remember having it and saying, I can't believe that Chile can make a wine like this. It's just an amazing wine.
It is.
You mentioned it's 92% Carmenere, and then the other 8, is it Petit Verdot?
Yeah, exactly. Petit Verdot, and I'm going to explain you why.
Okay.
Remember that I told you that you need to wait to harvest the grape. You need to wait quite long, till the middle of May at least, that when you harvest the grapes, you have an amazing amount of flavors, spiciness, red fruit, black fruit. It's wonderful. But because you wait so long, you lose almost all the acidity of the wine. The wine is quite flat. It's beautiful when you drink 100% of Carmenere. You put the wine in your mouth, and the wine, it's like an explosion of flavor, but lasts not too long in the mouth because it doesn't have that acidity. And we lost also the tannins. The tannins are so soft that it even is too soft. And so we decided to add this 8% of Petit Verdot that we call as our rugby player, or American football player, if you want to put it in American style. It's a wine that you bring back with only 8%, a lot of acidity, huge tannins. I always say that Petit Verdot, our Petit Verdot, the one that we produce for Purple Angel, by itself, it's almost undrinkable. It's so big, it's so tannic. The acidity is so high that you say, wow, you need to wait 20 years at least to be able to drink the wine. But that's why we only use 8% to improve the aging and the aging potential of the Purple Angel and the finish of the wine, and without changing the flavors of Carmenere. Because, for example, if you use Cabernet Sauvignon looking for the same target, to make the wine longer and blah, 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 you need to add at least 15 up to 20% of Cabernet to get the same result of 8% of Petit Verdot. But when you add more than 20% or 15% of other grapes, you lose the personality of the wine. So that's why we're using Petit Verdot, not to lose the personality of the wine, but to improve the mouth. And that's the reason.
Okay, so it's like it's giving it the backbone and some of the structure that it needs, but while still getting the beautiful flavors of Carmenere.
Exactly.
So it sounds like there's a real balancing act you have to do with Carmenere. You mentioned those green characteristics that you can have with other Carmeneres So that's what happens, I guess, when you harvest too early the Carmenere, you get those harsher kind of characteristics. And because the Purple Angel Carmenere goes through a longer growing season, that's how we get those beautiful aromas, flavors, beautiful mouthfeel. Okay.
And in the correct terroir, because if you are planted in a very rich soil, doesn't matter how much you wait, it's going to be always green. So you need a semi-poor soil with a good drainage where you can ripe much better the grapes.
Don't give away too many secrets. Someone else will make it.
Someone can copy us.
Where did the Purple Angel name come from? Is there a story behind that?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. Well, as you know, in Montes, since the beginning, we have been flying together with our angels everywhere. An angel for us, it's we call them our guard angels. And when we decided in the year 2002 to produce our first pure Carmenere, or almost pure Carmenere, we was looking for a name. And, well, of course, related with angels. And then we start looking the wine, we went to the vineyard, and you wait so long in the vineyard to harvest the grapes that most of the years, when you harvest, there's no leaf hanging from the vines. So if you go up to the hill and you look down, the vineyard look purple because all the cluster hanging from the vines. It's so, so beautiful. And also, when you produce Carmenere, the color of the Carmenere, it's so purple, it's so amazing that we always say, if you're during the harvest, during the fermentation, if you get a drop of Purple Angel of Carmenere in your shirt, forget about it. You're not going to be able to take it away. It's like an ink. Then the wine, when they evolve, they lose a lot of color and they drop the color. So doesn't bother. But at the beginning, it's like ink.
Yeah. Oh, and you know, you just reminded me of something. When I've had Purple Angel, it's so delicious and so tempting. I have to open it up and drink it almost as soon as I get it. And it's wonderful. How long can you actually put that in the cellar? I've never had a chance to
to wait that long.
I don't have the patience to wait for it, but I've always been curious. Is it something that you could put in the cellar and wait for it and it'll develop? And is that something that you would like to do?
Yes, but I have to be very honest with you. If you make me compare with other grapes like Cabernet Sauvignon, like Syrah, well, and other grapes, I would say that definitely the aging potential, it's not as big as Cabernet, for example. But it's a wine that also you have to add it that our first Carmenere ever been produced in Montes was 2002. So only 18 years of experience. But what I have realized is that every year we taste all the years of the Purple Angel to understand and to see how is the evolution of the wine. Till today, as an average, because depending on the year, I will say 15 years, no problem at all. If you want to wait 15 years, the wine is going to hold in a perfect condition. Very nice. More than that, will be not too serious to tell you yes or not, because I don't have the experience. Chile doesn't have the experience. But in terms of acidity, tannins, as a mathematical conclusion, I will say that maybe no more than 20.
And I'm fine with that, because I have too many wines that I'm waiting for and waiting for and waiting for. I like having a wine that I can drink right away and something I don't have to think about. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to be like, oh, should I open it? Should I not open it? Should I keep it another year? Like,
exactly.
I want to open it up. I want to drink it.
The worst part is when you open a bottle and you say, oh, I should wait, I don't know, 5 more years, but the wine is open.
Right, exactly.
Nothing to do.
Yeah, that's one of the things too I love about Purple Angel. I don't have to think about it. I just open it, I drink it, I enjoy it.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
That's one of the biggest advantages of Purple Angel, that even if you can wait 15 years or more maybe, it's a wine that one of the wines that you, after, I would say, 5 years of aging, or yeah, in between 3 to 5 years, the wine is ready. It's ready. You know, the wine, it's so, because of the tannins, because of the acidity, because of the type of wine, the wine always is almost always ready to be drinking. Of course, if you want to wait and you want to look for the evolution of the wine, you can wait longer.
I'm curious because the cuisine is a little bit different in the United States. I mean, it's similar in Chile, but are there special things that you would pair with Purple Angel that would be traditional from Chile, or are there things that you, certain dishes that you would specifically match with Purple? Like, I know everyone, you drink what you like, you drink whatever you like with whatever you like, but are there certain foods or dishes that you think really are accentuated or helped by Purple Angel or vice versa?
Yeah, that's a very good question because, you know, Purple Angel is a quite a versatile type of wine. Carmenere is a quite a versatile kind of wine that you can drink it with many type of food. In general, after tasting so many wine, food, and pairings, I would say that Purple Angel, because of the description of the wine, I would say that all type of spicy food, for example, Vietnamese food, even Thai food, works so well. You have to be careful only with curry that is too strong in terms of some people that like to cook with curry. Curry kills almost every type of wine. So it's the only spices that I don't like to cook with for the Purple Angel. But when you cook with spices, or if you do some barbecue and you like to add some pepper to the meat, it's wonderful. One of my best combinations, and I want to tell you why, is with lamb. In Chile, we cook, especially now that we're turning to spring, we're in spring, sorry, now, it's very typical that you barbecue and you cook lamb. And if you're outside, you cook with fire for 3-4 hours. So the advantage of Carmenere is that because, again, of the volume, but at the same time of the soft tannins, match so well with all this kind of strong flavors type of meat, because lamb is much stronger in terms of flavors than the cow meat, so match so well and you don't get collapse in terms of wine. I learned something about meat after living 5 years in Argentina. In Argentina, it's all about meat. Normally, and you're going to laugh, but it's completely true, when you invite people home for a barbecue, you normally calculate 2.2 pounds per person for a barbecue. So 1 kilo of meat per person. So at the beginning, I didn't trust in that. So I invite people calculating half of that. And my meat ran out. I ran out of meat in 1 hour. So I learned that, okay, these people really are really serious in terms of barbecue. But also what I learned is that you're eating a big piece of meat. You don't want a huge wine because at the end you get collapse. It's heavy with heavy. It's like adding more cream to the cream. So at the end, it's wow, it's too much. But when you drink a Malbec, for example, or a Carmenere, the combination is so good because the wine is so soft, so nice, but at the same time with so much flavor that you put in the mouth with the meat, especially lamb, and the combination is so good and you don't get tired of wine. That's why it's so important to choose, you know, the correct wine with the food.
Yeah, you know, a good meal, wine and food should be enjoyable, not exhausting.
Exactly, exactly.
That's a really good tip. It's something I never had thought about before. That's a good tip.
Yeah, it's so important.
So you have been a winemaker for a while now. You mentioned Argentina. I know you've made some wine in Argentina. You've made wine in Chile. And I know it can be very stressful to be in charge of all the winemaking. And I understand you do some really relaxing things in your off time, such as jumping out of planes, riding your motorcycle. You were a boxer at one point, and not someone who boxing grapes, but boxing like Muhammad Ali. So just tell me, like, What is it about the other things that you do in your life that kind of allow you to get away from winemaking? Why do you choose such crazy extreme things that to get away from winemaking?
Well, that's exactly what my father tell me every day. Why do you don't choose playing tennis or whatever?
Something
or
safe.
Why are you always choosing so extreme sports? And the reason why, because I'm a very energetic guy, I can't be, relaxed in my house. Every single weekend, even in the afternoon, I go home and I have to do sport, I have to run, I have to ride my bike, motorbike, or weekends skydiving. So I feel, and this is a personal point of view, that how extreme you make your sport depend on you. For example, skydiving sounds quite crazy and extreme sport. It's not that extreme if you're responsible and you use the correct equipment. Of course, it's more dangerous than playing tennis. But
yes.
But at the end of the day, for me, it's a way to feel completely alive, completely in contact with nature. And boxing, it's a way of pushing out all the pressure of the life, to relax, to learn about control yourself, and not to be aggressive. Because most of the people think that when you're a boxer, you're the type of guy that you are going to be fighting in the street like crazy. And believe me, that's few people that do that. Most of the boxers are people that are very equilibrated people that know what they have in between their hands. And they don't need to be fighting with anyone. So at the end, it's a thing of equilibrium. I need to balance my life in between adrenaline, in between making working tough in my life, in winemaking, being a good father. I have four kids, so I need to be a good father to doing sport with them, taking care of myself. No, I don't want to kill myself being a father. So for me, it's a thing of enjoying, 1,000 miles per hour your life. It's been going fast, enjoying. Also, I like to read. I like to during the night. So it's a thing of equilibrium.
And it sounds like you might be able to take some of those activities back into some of the things you learn in those activities. You can bring back into the cellar or even in the vineyards some of that control and passion that you put into those things and the energy. That's really good. That's very interesting. Is there anything else about Carmenere that you wanted to talk about that we didn't hit?
What I like to explain everyone about Carmenere is that I think people should try them because it's a different wine. It's like trying different food, different sports or different whatever. It's Carmenere. It's a grape that deserve to be known for everyone, and we're doing a huge job in terms of Chile to put Carmenere in the map. I feel that that every time that people try Carmenere, people get crazy. They get so happy, and if you look at statistics about how much Carmenere we're selling every year we're growing, and seriously growing. Because it's a fun wine, it's different wine, different style, but at the same time very elegant. So it's not a crazy wine. It's an elegant, equilibrated, and tasty wine. So definitely, I would love to invite everyone to give it a try and to understand what is the meaning of Carmenere in terms of flavors.
That's great, Aurelio. Thank you so much. This has been a great lesson on the grape of Carmenere from Chile. Thank you so much.
No, thank you, Joe. Keep safe with all this pandemia, and let's keep in contact.
Thanks so much for listening to my conversation with Aurelio Montes Jr. Check the show notes to find out how you can connect with him and the Montes Winery. If you want to learn more about Carmenere, visit wine365.com, where you can download a cheat sheet on everything you need to know about Carmenere wine. I'll be back with another episode in about 2 weeks. In the meantime, remember, wine is food, it comes from a place, enjoy it responsibly.